Welcher, welcher Gardinia Cochia, DL Debate, LaMisha Brennan, Old Davnia, and Shaw. Everyone, welcome to the DL Debate. And this time with Shasko G and Cathal Gearna. We are down to the last four, folks, and we are there, and we are heading for Dublin for an All Ireland semi final in 2 weeks' time. Absolutely phenomenal stuff. What a weekend, what a game. I'm going to get into it now soon with Conor McManus, former Monaghan and I suppose nationwide GAA legend that he is, and one of our own All-Ireland heroes from 2012, from Jim's last time with us, Martin Michael Haney. Can he repeat the magic? Well, I'll tell you what, whatever magic he did at half time, I don't know. I was texting him, I said, listen, I know you're going to play it down on Sunday, but I said, what happened? Because Donegal were a bit off at first half, but what a second half. Absolutely blowing Monaghan away. They had no answer, as the same as Louth in the previous week. Here's a wee bit of flavour from that game at the weekend.
Langan's going to send that one under Murphy. Murphy out ahead of the fullback. Here comes Langan. Oh, it's opened up for Michael Langan. Langan draws it into the back of the net. Donegal have got a goal. 1:15 plays, 1:17. Murphy linking up with Langan. And Donegal are back in this time.
Yeah, what a score from Langan. My God, Donegal needed that. I couldn't see where it was coming from there, Oisin. Whenever the tap of goal was taken by Conor O'Donnell, Donegal all stopped playing. The ball came under Murphy, the platform player, Langan, who has been playing within himself the last couple of games. Boy, did he come to life there, Oisin. Them big long legs in. He came into the edge of the D. He had one thing on his mind. He rattled the ball in the roof of the net. Super, super score.
Yes, yes, a bit excited there. Joe Dex is laughing at me. We're caught up in the emotion, yeah. And listen, what a score from Langan. And why I'm saying playing without himself, what I mean is from his performance in Tyrone, is 7 points. We need scores from Big Langan. We need him on the score sheet, along with everything else that he's doing around the pitch. And he stepped up to the plate, and that is Michael Langan. I tell you what, Began, one of the best keepers in the country. Listen, when he put up his hand, the ball was already in the net. Absolute thumper of a goal. Fair play to him. As I say at the top of the show, we're going to hear now shortly from Conor McManus and from Martin McAhaney, two lads that are still playing club football as well, so I caught up with them about an hour ago. And after that, we are going to run through the rest of the games with the one and only Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent. Always a great man to talk to, and always gives a different angle on games, an author as well, and as I say, great man to catch up with. We're going to go through the games with him. But first up, as I say, I caught up with the two lads about an hour ago just to get their views on Donegal and Monaghan.
Yes, Martin and Conor, welcome to the show, lads.
Morning, Brendan.
Hello, Brendan. How are you, sir?
Much appreciated. Listen, lads, thanks so much for joining us, lads. Really, really appreciate it, lads. Getting straight into the ball, lads. And, you know, I want to ask the two of you about this game and about just the flip-flop nature of it. I'm trying to think of a game that I've seen turn as much as that. Listen, boys, we've all seen so much football over time, and Conor, it must have been very hard for you to watch, but I just start with you, Conor. In terms of games going from one team playing so well one half to another, in terms of both teams basically mirroring what each other did in either half, have you seen a championship game like that before?
No, it was a strange game from that point of view. It couldn't have been any more different or any more contrasting from the two halves, particularly from one point of view. We were so good in the first half, and it just quite the opposite to that in the second half. Whatever happened, you know, to be fair to Donegal, a lot of that probably has to do with how they approached the game in the second half. You know, they played with a wee bit more urgency. They got a better handling on their own kick out and the Monaghan kick out. But at half time, you certainly didn't see that second half coming. You knew, obviously, that there was a response coming from Donegal, but you were still thinking, you know, 7 point lead. You know, if we could keep the scoreboard ticking in any way, shape or form, that you could be hard to close down, you know, and hard to beat. As I say, even though you knew Donegal were going to come strong.
Yeah. And Martin, what was your feeling on that coming strong? Martin, obviously you've been in plenty of gym teams over time in terms of how they, you know, they had a certain mentality. But we were really out of sorts, you know. And, you know, the way we were playing, even Sean Patton's kickouts that have been unbelievable all season. He was having a bit of an off day. So that comeback that we were hoping would come, but as Conor was saying, you thought that Monaghan would still chip on with scores. So at half time, like, we were right up against it. Could you believe what happened in the second half?
No, look, to be honest with you, I thought when Rory Began hit that two-pointer at the end, I thought everything's falling for Monaghan here now. It's going to be a big ask for Donegal to come back. Half-time probably came at the right time for Donegal. They were able to get in and regroup, you know, sit down. And I would say, I heard Michael Langan say that there were a lot of them not happy with performances, so they were going to go and give it a go and have a take it by the scruff of the neck, you know. But from my point of view, I thought because Donegal looked so leggy in the first half, they weren't getting back into their shape. I thought, you know, where's this energy going to come from? Because, you know, there's so many games and successive weeks and stuff. I thought, you know, it's really going to be hard. And even if Donegal did come back with a fight back, Monaghan had that 2-point shooters that could just clip you off, you know, here and there and keep that gap to a 4 or 5 point game. But look, I didn't see the collapse from Monaghan come at all, you know, in fairness.
And I agree with you, Martin. And that's, listen, I'm very much a glass half full man. I always would put a place for it. Now, what I'd seen at Donegal all season and the way Monaghan were cutting through us, we weren't really getting a piece of them at all. You mentioned Began's 2-pointer. Connor, I mean, that was a ridiculous kick. Yeah. I mean, Began could have carried that further. He just got the ball and said, I'm going to just wallop this over the bar. That's one of the best scores I've ever seen in Croke Park. And just previous to that, you know, Patton had been done for like taking too long my kick out, which we rarely see now. And I thought, as Martin was saying there, the one where Ryan McHugh got inside, remember the D, there was a couple of Monaghan defenders coming on. Was it a foul? Was it not? But then he got blown for overcarrying. So everything, you can feel the energy from the Monaghan crowd there. So at half-time, Connor, you must have thought, even with a potential kickback, and funny, Desi Moan, I met up there, and he was the only man that said, I have a fear. When I looked at him, he says, no, Donegal will come back. And he's the only man I seen that actually thought that. And right, he was, I suppose. But as Martin was saying, he probably didn't see the collapse.
No, you fully expected, like, I agree with Desi in that, you fully expected Donegal to respond. You up, like, 7 points isn't a big lead at this in the game anymore. You know what I mean? It's not a big lead, particularly the way the game's played. 2-pointers. You know, the opportunity to get goals is even more prevalent than it used to be. So a 7-point lead isn't massive. So I didn't feel that 7-point lead was going to be enough for Monaghan. But I also thought that, you know, Monaghan would have got enough scores on the board maybe just to keep them Donegal at bay. You felt that it was probably going to come down to the last 5 or 10 minutes. That's what you were thinking at halftime. If we can just keep the scoreboard ticking, it's going to be difficult for Donegal. If we keep scoring, you know, you're not expecting to kick another 1-15 in the second half. But you know, you're thinking 8 or 10 points will make it difficult for Donegal to go and win the game. And that's what you're thinking would potentially happen. But it just didn't work out for Monaghan in the second half. Donegal took 1-11 from turnovers on the kick out. And that was probably the exact opposite to what was happening in the first half. Monaghan were doing harm on Donegal's kick out. Monaghan were getting a lot of joy from turning Donegal over in their attack. And, you know, they were getting scores at the bottom end of the field. So it was a role reversal of the two teams. But you couldn't have seen that Monaghan would only, you know, I think Michael Langan kicked that 2-pointer over in the 34th minute or the 33rd or 34th minute of the second half. And at that stage, it was 1-15 to 3 points. In the second half, like, and you won't get to an All-Ireland semi-final with that sort of a return. So the boys will be hugely disappointed with their second half, having put themselves in such a great position, you know, at half-time.
Yeah, and there's probably deeper stuff in there, Connor, which I'd love to get your opinions on. And Connor mentioned there, Martin, you know, the 1-11 in the second half on the Monaghan kick-out. It was 1-8 that Monaghan got in the first half. Very unlike Donegal in terms of conceding 1-15. I mean, Monaghan scored 21 in the corresponding fixture in Ulster. They were 3 points off that at half-time. So I think probably our fear, and I agree with Connor, we did expect a comeback, but I guess the thing was energy here, Martin, seemed to be lacking. And then we're thinking, was it the games catching up for us? But then in the second half, that all seemed to dissipate and Donegal just ran riot. And I know you've been teaching Michael Langan how to put the ball in the back of the net for years, and it obviously paid off at the weekend.
No, I doubt that. He doesn't need much teaching there, in fairness. Look, that was the worry that I would have had, is, you know, Donegal were always going to come back. Definitely, they were going to put a big effort in. But I couldn't see where they were going, if it was coming tight down the line in the last 10, 15 minutes, you know, after all them hard games, where the energy was going to come from. But as I said, the half time came at the right time. And I would say that a couple of them senior Donegal players in there just says, look, boys, we're going out here if we don't take it by the scruff of the neck. And they just went and competed that extra 2 to 3, the kickouts and stuff. And they started getting the breaks, you know, when there was maybe one down, as you said, the one down the sideline, Monaghan were feeling hard done by. But Donegal kind of got started getting the rub of the green then, because you add them extra 1 or 2%. And then when the goal went in, then it was, the whole thing just changed. And I would say the energy just sapped out of Monaghan big time. And then they lost your man through injury as well, who carries a lot of ball from them.
Ryan McInnesby, yeah.
He carried down through the years, he's carried a lot of ball out of defence and stuff like that for Monaghan. So probably lost him too, and they lost a bit of their shape as a result. And look, when there's no better team at the moment in Ireland when they turn the screw on you than Donegal. You know, they have runners coming from everywhere, and they just couldn't get that in the first half. And then when they smelt it in the second half, they just went after it. And as I said, then the bench too did a lot of damage when they came on. They had a lot more, probably a bit more quality than Monaghan had coming on, and it really showed in the end.
Yeah, and you know, on that, there was a couple of brilliant kicks. You know, on about Beggins, Thompson's two-pointers were phenomenal, particularly the second one. You know, unbelievable score. There was a couple of half-goal chances in there. But, Conor, at half-time, what do you think? You know, obviously, Gabriel's come in there, done a brilliant job. Andy Moore's in there. You can tell high energy, the whole backroom team they have there. Is it hard, Conor, to kind of assess what Donegal's going to bring in the second half, seeing as they were so out of sorts? I mean, you'd really love to see the two dressing rooms. I mean, of course you can forgive Monaghan for being obviously full of buzz and energy and thinking, you know, we have them boys in some way. Or do you think was there an air of caution in there? And whatever happened in the Donegal side, as Martin says, you know, between Jim and his backroom team and senior players standing up, we need to come at it. It's a very hard dressing room, I suppose. Conor, to take out in that second half, you know, you can't go out with caution. You've got to still go at it. But how do you kind of prepare yourself for a Donegal onslaught?
Yeah, well, I suppose that's probably one thing that maybe came against Monaghan, is that they didn't maybe get tested that overly much, or a question asked of them overly much in the All-Ireland series. You know, they played Donegal in the Ulster Championship. They were knocked out straight away of the Ulster Championship, and then they were into an All-Ireland series where they topped the group and were largely expected to top the group the minute the draw was made. So you couldn't say that Monaghan came into that game overly road-tested, you know, and battle-hardened. And that maybe, you know, when that bit of pressure did come on in the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half, Monaghan haven't been in that situation this year. A lot of their games have gone, you know, by and large, the way they would have wanted them. So I think that the benefit they'll get now going into next year, obviously being in Division 1, playing Division 1 teams week in, week out, will definitely stand to them. But I don't think there would have been any sense of panic or anything from Monaghan at half-time. They put themselves, like, I'm sure they would have talked about how they wanted to start the game, how they wanted to go after Donegal. Like, they had a really good press on Donegal's kick-out, a 4-4-4 press, and it was working really well. And it's a sort of a blueprint for any other team that's playing Donegal now, that's the first time Sean Patton's kick out has been come under any sort of pressure at all, you know.
And Conor, just on the management there, is it a thing where, you know, you've seen glimpses of some brilliance from Monaghan this year? Not more, you've seen a lot of brilliant play from them. Is this just, in games, momentum goes against a lot of teams? Conor, I'm sure this isn't a thing where, you know, it's doom and gloom. You know, you've got to, I suppose, just be able to, I suppose, central players is huge here. You know, you think about your spine of the team, you know, still a fairly young team by and large coming through there. Is it something where Monaghan need to get that experience kind of, so they'll learn a hell of a lot from this in terms of when a team comes at you, being able to maybe cool down the game, calm it down, work a score, and get into a position where we can hold ourselves in the game? Is that, I suppose, the big learning?
That's it, Ty. Like, largely it was a positive year for Monaghan. You could, like, they would have been very disappointed not to progress in the Ulster Championship. Obviously, playing Donegal that day in Clonus, that they probably felt it was an opportunity to progress on in the Championship. But, you know, they got themselves back to Croke Park. They played some brilliant football, and they've shown that over the course of the year that they're playing a really good brand of football. They're scoring heavily. And they'll definitely learn from Saturday night. It's just the unfortunate part of it is that they don't get a chance to put that right again, you know, until next year. That's the cut and thrust of knockout championship football. So from Monaghan's point of view, yeah, there's definitely, you know, learning in that, but there's definitely positives to be taken out of the year. And it's just about building on that, going into next year. Division 1 football, I think, will definitely stand to them. And, you know, we'll just push on in 2026.
Yeah.
They probably did lack that bit of experience then, just to try and slow the game down, take a bit of the sting out of it.
Just probably needed to know the value of a point, you know, at certain stages in that second half. Win a free, just get the thing slowed down, get ourselves on the scoreboard, get ourselves pressing Sean Patton's kick out again. Like we didn't get enough ball even dead or wide, you know, and that. So it was just a case of just trying to grab the game by the scruff of the neck and just wrestle control back. And it just, look, we've all been in games like that where, you know, things start rolling against you and no matter what you do, you just can't get it turned. And that just looked like that from on in the second half, and they just probably needed to get a score, get on the board and try and stem the tide a wee bit.
Martin, you mentioned there's nobody better than Donegal coming in the run. Do you think some of the performances out there, you know, Langan after his brilliant 7 points against Tyrone, which is unreal, he didn't score in the next couple of games, and he didn't seem to be getting into positions. But Connor mentioned the 2-pointer hit, but the goal, you know, we talk about goals and 2-pointers, was there still something about a goal, the way it lights up the place? And you know, Began had made a couple of 1-on-1 stops before that, but I don't even think his hand was up before it hit the back of the net. And there was even something about the manner of the goal. It gave Donegal so much life, and you know, everything just started to wave. And you talk about, you know, fans and support, then the way that rush comes through the team. And if Donegal were lacking energy in the second half, in the first half, they certainly weren't in the second. It was an unbelievable amount of pace and energy they brought.
Yeah, no, that's it. As you said, there's something about a goal, and probably the way he actually hit it as well. Like Began just kind of stood there. He didn't have time to even to react to it. There was that much power in it. And just give everybody a lift, and you think, we're back in this now, straight away. Like, and then other boys feed off that energy. Like, you know, they start making the runs that they mightn't have been making in the first half. You know, because Monaghan were stopping them, and then they're going to say, well, we're going to get on the end of it. And look, Donegal can hurt you a lot of ways. They did that then. Shane O'Donnell carried a serious amount of ball. He gets a lot of touches, and did Michael. And then the other boys are always stepping up. Like Kieran Thompson never really gets the same plaudits as other boys, but he's always in there with two points, 3 points, you know what I mean? He's so reliable. So they can hurt you all over the place. Like, and then I thought Jason McGee did well when he came on too, in fairness. Yes. He got physical around the middle as well, and he was able to get up and down a bit, so that helped.
I think Kieran Thompson's two-pointers in the first half were huge. When things were going against Donegal, when it wasn't necessarily happening for them, for him to land them two scores, you know, and just keep Donegal on Monaghan's tail, were massive, massive scores. Particularly,
they definitely just kept them in it.
And Connor, see, that was it. O'Hanlon had the goal chance in the second half. He put it over the bar. No, listen. Do you think if that one then would it? Do you think, is there anything in that second half that Monaghan could have gripped on there, or is that?
Yeah, well, certainly that would have just you know, knocked Donegal back in their stride a wee bit. You know what I mean? A point wasn't going to just do that much harm, but a goal just reaffirmed Monaghan's belief and reaffirms where they're at in the game. And I think a goal would have been a massive score. Like it's such a fine margin. Like that, the goal that Donegal did get, you know, down along the sideline. We had two lads went down on it to get it gathered up and just didn't get it up into their hands. The conditions were getting slippy at that stage. Ball shipped across the far side of the field and ends up in the back of the net 7 or 8 seconds later. Like, so it's just such a fine margin, and teams can hurt you so quick, you know, and that's what Monaghan found. But yeah, no, a goal at that stage in the game, I think, would really settle Monaghan down in that second half, you know, and maybe just allowed them to breathe a bit. I think they probably got suffocated in that second half, and the longer it went on, and the less scores we were getting, it just the life got sucked out of them. So a goal would have been a big score.
Yeah, and you mentioned Martin Shane O'Donnell already. Man of the match, unbelievable. I thought he was very close. Connor O'Donnell.
Connor O'Donnell couldn't be far away from it either.
Flying, yeah. I mean, you look at Rorty. I mean, the way he goes around tackling him, and Donegal actually were sitting off Monaghan. He was a one player, was tenacious. He was in tackling around. You know, Murphy, just every game, Murphy just does his thing. Sure, missed a couple of scores. Listen, it didn't come down to that. It was kind of unlike him. But his general play and his flick downs and his ability just to lead the team, it's every game, Murphy, for me, every game he plays, he's either an 8 or a 9. It's just unbelievable what he's doing there. And you mentioned that Oisin hit the gallon at the first couple of scores of the game, faded out a small bit then. But you mentioned the bench there, Darrell Boyle, Jason McGee and McBertie in particular. And, you know, we've seen the best of McBertie coming on there. You know, he was involved. He won the interception, was involved in the next score. And then he waited to kick his point, Martin. And listen, you've played with the man. his experience now is vital. And McGee wasn't going to catch ball. He was flicking it down, but he was flicking it down to Donegal guys and Darragh O'Boyle as well. I mean, it's very hard to kind of leave Darragh out, but serious impact man to bring in. So all boding well now with a 2-week break for Donegal.
Ah, yeah, it is, surely. And look, that's what you want. You know, you want people to come in off the bench and make an impact. You know, when the game's kind of opened up a wee bit, the people that have been on from the start are a wee bit tired. And it, like, in fairness, there's probably no better two players in Donegal at the moment than Darragh O'Boyle and Paddy McBrady to do that. You know, if they get a yard of space, they're going to have a shot. And I would say they're as high a scorers as Donegal have this year. You mentioned Finn Barotti there. Like, I didn't really see him much last year, or I didn't know much about him, but you kind of think an 18-year-old coming in to play inter-county football, yes, he's going to be good, but is he going to be up to it physically? You know, because they have a lot of conditioning done now. But geez, I just think he's been absolutely brilliant. Like, he's so tenacious in the tackle, he's aggressive, and it, like, every time he makes contact with anybody with the ball pops up. You know what I mean? He's just, his hand-eye coordination just must, is brilliant. Like, he has been really, really, really good for Donegal.
Yeah, first class. Connor, we're nearly at the end of our wee chat here, lads. Connor, I'm going to, in terms of the neutral there, I know you've been at a lot of games, you're doing great work there on punditry around BBC and that. Tell me, what are you thinking now in the two semis? Where is your head telling you the title is going to go? They're hard games to call.
It is. It's ridiculously hard to call. Like, we were trying to do that this last 2 or 3 weeks and you couldn't do it. And even now that it's down to 4, you're still struggling to do it. You would have to fancy that Donegal will get themselves to a final. You know, they're probably more assured of that than the other two teams on the other side. You know, and now listen, Meath will obviously have a say on that. You know, and the way they've played, they've taken out Dublin in the Championship, they've taken out Kerry, they've taken out Galway. So they'll be going into that, you know, bouncing with confidence. But if you're a neutral looking at that, you would think that Donegal, you know, from the start of the year, I'd sort of pinned Donegal as favourites for All Ireland. And, you know, they're ticking off all the boxes as they go. They've played a lot of games. They're road tested. Their big players are playing well. They've got a strong bench. You know, they're ticking all the boxes for that. So I think the fact that they're, you know, a more of a sure thing to be in the final than maybe Tyrone or Kerry, that could go either way that game. You'd have to be thinking that Donegal are edging towards favourites at the minute.
Yeah, that's interesting. Martin, what do you think of that? You know, I was looking at that. Obviously, the Dublin team they played in Leinster, you know, with a few issues in there. The Kerry team are missing quite a few that day. And of course, Galway haven't been maybe at their best. Like, if I thought Meath and Kerry were going to play in Croke Park again, I think that might be a different outcome now. Martin, but I'm not taking anything away, of course, from Meath. We'll be very respectful of them. They're a good side, but we will go into this game as favourites, Martin.
Yeah, we are going in as favourites. Like, you can't take anything away from Meath. They're there. They deserve to be there. You know, they've beat three of the big teams on the way. They have a couple of very good players. Like, even they have a kind of a similar story to Murphy. You know, by Brian Menton, he was retired for 2 or 3 years. He's back in playing now, and he's playing probably better than ever around the middle. It was very good yesterday. But they'll be full of confidence. You know, they'll think, Jesus, every time they beat the Division 1 teams, they're coming through. They'll be thinking, look, we can do this. And, you know, confidence is a great thing. You sometimes in the Championship, you get in a bit of a run like that there, you know, you're very, very hard to beat. But at the moment, Donegal are definitely favourites. Mm-hmm. But on the other one, it's harder to call. You know, I always thought at the start of the year, even though Kerry had their problems defensively and all, I thought they had the forwards. If they get to Croke Park and the new rules, like, they're going to be very, very hard to beat. Like, so I actually kind of fancy them to get a run to the final, even after getting beat by Meath. I did think they would. Now, they probably have to tighten up a wee bit defensively. But if there's anyone that could hurt you going forward with the new 2 points in that, it's Kerry. Like, so it's an interesting one. But whether Tyrone will let them play football and let them do that, it's a hard one to call. It's a lot harder to call. But as you say, Donegal are definitely favourites going into that first semi-final.
Yeah, that's it, folks. We'll have to carry the favourite tag. And talking about retirements, two men that haven't retired. Serious servants for St Michael's and Donegal, Martin McAhanney, of course, Clontibret and Monaghan, lads. Fair play to you. You're still going down club scene yet?
Hanging on in the more. I don't know about Martin, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, you'll be two men that we need watching yet. Lads, listen, thanks so much for joining us today on the DL Debate. Much appreciated.
No worries, Brendan.
Thanks, lads.
I'll let them finish. I was jumping on ahead of them. Listen, great to catch up with the two lads. I say, Burr Martin, Matt guy, took a bit of a knock there yesterday. He had the leg up as well, all for the love of the game and St. Michael's. Fair play. Listen, lads, thanks so much. I say, we're going to speak to Colm Keyes in a few minutes. We've Jim McGuinness in the background. We might get a couple of words from him just on his reaction to the game. We'll get it after this break. Yes, welcome back to DL Debate. Now we've got a few words from Donegal manager Jim McGuinness, who was jubilant, he was proud, he was happy to get through that quarter final.
Listen, it was one of those moments, to be fair. You know, you're 7 points down, you're playing against a team very, very high on confidence. They're bringing a bit of a unique game plan to the championship in many respects. You know, they're going all in twos, and they also have incision players that, you know, if you're stepping to the twos, and you have to step to the twos in order to keep that number down, they still have people like you know, Brannigan, O'Hannon, these kind of boys that can punch a hole through you. So they were getting things really right in the first half. We were trying our best. First 15 minutes, I'd say we were really happy with the way we were defending them in many respects. We were doing well on the scoreboard, and we were getting turnovers. But their game plan kicked in, and the numbers were there before the game. We knew what they were going to bring. You know, that's what they have been working on. That's what they've been sort of banking on in many respects. And I would imagine from a Monaghan point of view, with the two-pointer that they kicked just before the break, they'd be like, right, you know, this is it. You know, we have the magic formula. So we didn't change anything, to be honest, because we had the work done, we had the plan going into the game done, we just doubled down on that, and we didn't change any personnel either. We trusted the fellas to get it right themselves, and then it's over to the players. You know, it's a moment then where you've got to say, listen, we're in a hole here, and only the players can get themselves out of that hole. You know, so very, very happy that they responded the way they did. And very happy with the bench as well. That was very important as well. Everybody that came on made a massive contribution. Yeah, listen, I was just speaking about Monaghan and their game plan and how much they're bought into their game plan. We have to be exactly the same. You know, we trust our processes as well. We trust, like, what we're doing week in and week out, you know, is going to be stress tested, you know. And there's a different stress every single time you play a game, you know. We'll be in a semi-final now, and I don't know who we'll be playing, but there'll be a different set of variables. And, you know, there's a lot of very good coaches out there, and they're working on their things as well. So it's about trying to respond to that, you know. Probably from our own point of view, letting ourselves drift back into a 7-point deficit was a tough enough hole to be in. But I would caveat that with the fact that, you know, you're playing against a team that are very, very, very hungry for twos. And so, yeah, once we got that under control in the second half and we were able to manage that, and they continued to look for the twos, an awful lot of balls dropping short and stuff, it was a double-edged sword then, because you're then not conceding twos, but you're also then scoring at the other end. And that's what we were trying to do from the first minute. But that wasn't the case.
Yeah, Jim McGuinness there, happy, jubilant Jim McGuinness, but relieved as well, particularly after that first half. Brilliant second half from the lads. Now I'm delighted to say I'm joined by an author, Gaelic game writer and editor of the Irish Independent, Colm Keyes. Colm, welcome to the show.
Hello, Brendan. Thanks for having me.
How are you keeping well, sir?
I'm keeping very good. How was your brief stay down in County Meath?
Thanks for your wee bit of local knowledge. Yeah, listen, we went to a bit of a water park, and we were late landing, so we weren't even sure whereabouts we were. So you give us a bit of a quick overview of where I actually was. So we went and visited the Hill of Tara, and I was on the Boyne for a dip and a ring, so the head was clear by the time we got to Crow Park.
That's where the salmon, not far from where the salmon of knowledge existed many, years ago. By legend, Brendan. So you were in very historical parts there.
Lovely, lovely. Of course, a county with a lot of great history. You are a Meath man, of course. I have to ask, and I'm going to get there with you, Meath Donegal question, Colm. But generally, Colm, you've seen so much in Gaelic games now, and there's many years as we've tried to find ways to our games to promote them in terms of big teams playing each other in different formats. But quarterfinals have often been a bit of a damn squid at times with us. But it seems now with the new rules that there's a guaranteed level of excitement in games, you know, that's really ratcheted up.
Yeah, I've found quarterfinals. I actually found in the past, I've always found semifinals largely are the best. It's almost the best stage. If you recall back to 2014, on the same weekend that Donegal did the number on Dublin that afternoon in Crow Park, the night before you had that Mayo Kerry replay in the Gaelic grounds. Fantastic game too. Right. And the week before you had the Mayo Kerry, the drawn game in Croke Park when Donaghy came on and turned it. So you generally get it in semi-finals, not so much in quarter-finals. But I have to say the weekend, Dublin and Tyrone apart, I thought that was a poor game. A lot of mistakes and neither team really, really went for it. Felt like a slow bicycle race for a long time. But I thought the Donegal-Monaghan game, for different reasons in either half, was really exhilarating. Some great football from both sides. And obviously Meath and Galway, the upset that was, and the manner of Galway's come back first and then Meath's come back. And I just thought the second half, what Kerry produced, and it was all over long before the final whistle. You see Armagh supporters getting up and leaving. But that performance from Kerry in that 15-minute period, for anyone that was there, it was a privilege to witness that, Brendan, I would think, for anybody watching on, because that's up there in terms of a period of time. That's up there with anything that's been produced, certainly in the modern era. You got to go back to, for Kerry, you probably have to go back to the 2009 All-Ireland quarter-final, the day of the start of the earwigs, as Pat Gilroy, the Dublin manager, described his team when Kerry hit them so hard in those opening minutes and really took off that day after. They had a very poor few weeks. They had almost lost to Sligo. They played poorly against Longford and Antrim. So they really came in under a cloud that day in 2009. But I would actually elevate this Kerry performance, that second half, above that, because this was the All-Ireland champions Armagh. Armagh were playing to a high standard for all of the year, really. They looked to be in really good shape. They'd retrofitted their team very well for the new rules. Bit of pace that they had brought, the two-point kickers that brought them into focus. Everything looked good. But I think what Kerry did yesterday really was, as I said, great to be there to watch it. So out of the four quarterfinals, I'd say with three, we're up to a very high standard in terms of competitiveness and entertainment. I just feel for the two teams that was involved, Dublin and Dublin the Throne, that probably just fell flat a bit.
Yeah, there've been a lot of funny games that both teams have been involved in, and people were talking to me before. There was the one game, just there was no form really to go on. It seemed to be a good game, bad game, but yeah, you're our man Kerry, Kerry's game, you know, we'll stick with that one. You were talking about it. That was probably the game of the weekend that everybody really wanted to see. And from this Kerry team, you know, obviously missing Barry Dan, missing Dermot O'Connor, a lot of people are on about the Armagh midfield power, and Ryan O'Neill was back, and Armagh are one of those teams. Even though they won All Ireland last year, you know, they're fanatical about football, and the fans are driving them on, and they wanted more, and this team wanted more. But Kerry were bitten, and you know, you spoke with Jack O'Connor and that after. How much now do you think, even though he was firing back, do you think that the biting at them from ex-players, even the likes of Darragh O'Shea, do you think that helped galvanise this Kerry team, or did they need that? Because I would say that dressing room, this was a real do-or-die clash for them, I think, Colm, in terms of this team. You know, if they were beat there, this was going to send them back in terms of what was expected of this team. So this was a massive, massive game for Kerry.
I have no doubt they feasted on that and some of the comments made, and even if the comments were not as bad as maybe they were portrayed, managers will do that to get a reaction. And Jack O'Connor said in his post-match press conference, Brendan, yesterday, a wounded Kerry team coming to Croke Park is dangerous. And you have to recall in 2014, they won the All-Ireland title without Colm Cooper that year. Colm Cooper did his cruciate early in the season. There's no way you would have thought, given the form he'd been in. He'd been an all-star in three of the previous 4 years. He had carried them, literally carried them, in the previous years. And then he was gone for the season. And they just lifted themselves, everyone, almost to a man, under Eamon Fitzmaurice, the second year. And they obviously got to Donegal in the All-Ireland final. Won that without the Gooch. You go back to 2009, I've mentioned that. They came into that 2009 All-Ireland quarter-final under a cloud. Even 2006, the year they won in 2006, to beat Armagh in an All-Ireland quarter-final, came in under a slight cloud there. Maybe not as pronounced as 2009. So they're very good at generating that grievance, that bit of hurt. And they normally generate it from within, because no matter what, you go further out and up the country, you go, the respect for Kerry is always great. Everybody will, the back of their mind, have that fear that they can do what they did in 2009 and again yesterday. Yeah. But within Kerry, they are the harshest critics. You must remember, Paddy O'Shea called them the roughest effing animals around. And he got into a lot of hot water in that in 2002, an interview he did in the Sunday Independent. And he ended up apologising by a quayside in South Africa when they were on their team holiday after that. That's an image that stays in the mind. And really, his reign was probably never the same after that. But they are quite some observers in Kerry. They certainly have opinions, not too slow about putting the opinions across. But obviously in the sights, Jack had Kerry players or ex-Kerry players. And you mentioned Darragh O'Shea, who commits to an Irish Times call every Wednesday. And maybe he had that in mind. He didn't actually specify. But Jack feels that there should be loyalty to the team from Kerry players in the media in the same way that he perceives it to be the case with Dublin players in the media. Now, I can probably point to a few examples that may not just align with that, but certainly he feels that if you're from a county, you should be as loyal as possible, even in your public utterances about that county, regardless of whether you are being paid by a media organisation or not for your honest appraisal.
And Colm, all your team watching sport, if a team wins the All-Ireland from a point where not only they're not expected to, but it's been a long, long time, Armagh's second All-Ireland, is there always a chance there's going to be a game where they get stung in terms of, you know, is that the normal, even though they were building up, there looked to be a bit of assured in the group games, but of course they weren't really, they were never do or die for them. Is there a thing where, you know, you look at the performance levels across, you know, okay, first half, but how much they dropped in the way Kerry absolutely battered them second half, you know, the performance of Mark O'Shea, I mean, unreal. You know, Sean O'Shea, David Clifford, all the skills that we thought maybe Armagh would shut down a bit. And then particularly Rafferty, I suppose, and the goal in terms of the Armagh kick-out. And it's a massive part, obviously, in all the games and that. But is that something that's in there in a lot of teams, if they come and won that All-Ireland, that there is a chance where Kerry, obviously, bitten and hungry, we're going to have too much for them? I know it's hindsight, but is that a thing that you think normally can kind of catch a team at this stage of the championship in the second year?
I think it can, yeah. But did I see that coming yesterday? I thought everything was in place for Armagh to win that game. And same. 40 minutes into same. That game, when they were 5 points ahead, I would have thought they will kick on from here and they will do enough to preserve that lead and chip away and keep Kerry at arm's length and win it, maybe not comfortably, but win it with a little bit in hand. And I also thought they'd have the impact off the bench. I certainly didn't think Kerry would have that impact off the bench. And when Tom O'Sullivan was taken off, I thought Kerry were in deep trouble because he's a potential 2-point scorer and he's a player that gets up. You remember the two goal chance he had against Armagh last year? Had he put either of those away, I think we'd be talking about a different All-Ireland champions, maybe. And the shoe would be on the other foot there. I didn't think the Kerry bench would be as deep. You mentioned Mark O'Shea. You mentioned players like that. They really, really stood up. Evan Looney came in off the bench and, you know, had a fine game. Micheál Burns, where did that come from? Yeah. Those 2 points and those darting runs and jink. He was off the team last year. I'm not sure. Did he leave himself or was he removed from the squad? I'm not too sure about that. But he came back this year on the back of fine Dr. Croke's form and he really made an impact. And Jack made sure to name check him in his post-match briefing too afterwards.
Yeah. Listen, it was mighty stuff. Tell me now, of course, you are a proud Meath man. You have to stay impartial in your national ratings there. But tell me, there's always often a team of the season. You know, obviously, it was Armagh last year from all the heartbreak to come through. Now, at the start of the season, I'll be honest with you, myself, Aaron Kiernan, and Colm Parkinson do a wee bit of a podcast every week. Now, Willie has been beating the drum for Meath. And we were thinking to himself, right, fair enough. You know, Leinster man probably got more of an inside track. And we're thinking, yeah, when we were putting it together, look at the league, they had a lot of ingredients, particularly with the new rules. You thought, you know, they went after teams that kicked the ball, big men, plenty of scorers, 2-point threat. But we weren't sure what exactly would come. And particularly then when we rewind to Joey McMahon and Martin Corey leaving, from what was I thought be Robbie Brennan? Now, I didn't know a lot of him outside of his club success. But I thought, God, because we were all waiting. I think underneath it, you know, a lot of us grew up with Meath football, particularly from Donegal in those times, late 80s into the 90s, and you always wanted Meath to come back to be that team, particularly to challenge Dublin. But did you think at that point, come, were you worried for the season in terms of they're two highly regarded coaches? But what's happened since with Robbie Brennan and particularly the three big victories? It's been absolutely phenomenal. And Meath back in a semi final. And listen, full value for it.
Absolutely full value for it. I thought there were 3 to 4, maybe 5 points a better team than Galway. And I felt that had they not got over the line as they did, they really, really would have regretted that. But you go back to the league. Meath performed pretty well during the league. Beat Cavan. They beat Cavan, they beat down Roscommon. And then the performances started to taper off. And within sight of Division 1, they lost heavily to Monaghan, then lost again to Louth and Enniskeen. And then the two coaches, as you mentioned, left. No explanation. They just upped and left. And at the same time, in that last game against Louth, Jordan Morris suffered extensive leg and knee damage in a collision, and it looked like he was out for the season. So you would not at that stage have given them any chance. But certainly Robbie Brennan appears to me to be a galvaniser. He's a very positive man. He's a very, I would know him to really give players their space to express themselves. And I think you can probably see that through Morris. He returned for the Leinster final. Not to me, they aren't too structured. They're not slaves to any particular systems. I would have felt over the years, Meath have really, really struggled when they have come up against tactically set up defences that they just have not been able to break down, because it's not really a way that any club team plays. That they're not really used to that style of play. But with the extra space, the two-pointers, the facility for two-pointers, there's a lot of good kickers of the ball. You saw some of the cross-field passes, diagonal balls that were kicked in towards Morris and towards Owen Frayne. And some great kick passing yesterday. No two-pointers, but they've been one of the foremost teams in terms of delivering from outside the arc. And then the kickouts. Kickouts not going short. The longer they go, it appears that the better it is, because they are used to getting up and contesting. So there's a lot of elements in the new rules that would probably align more to the way Meath football is played than the game that had developed over the previous decade. From Robbie Brennan's point of view, obviously All-Ireland winning manager with Kilmacud Crokes, but he has a good way with players, and certainly from what I gather, he's been able to really, really generate belief and have those players thinking that they are maybe even better than what they are.
Yeah, and very interesting that, because there's obviously magic in there, and certain people just, they have that thing going, don't they? And other counties want it, and they try managers, but there's just certain people who's able to deliver that drive, and as you said, bringing people together. I mean, Morris has won 6, you mentioned. You know, Costello being back in there, it's funny, him and Comer were both named to 26. I'm sure Galway won't be happy that maybe Comer should have been on earlier. But I thought, thinking about Costello outside of his 4 points, when the goal they set up, the second goal, which was the massive score in terms of Galway, it hit the 2-3. Like, you're on about confidence, the resilience, obviously, that Robbie Brennan has put on them. Because at that point, I had to leave. I was looking after my club team at the weekend, and it killed me to leave the game when Galway got their goal. And at that point, I thought, oh, that's it. The more experienced team has got control. But as you say, there's some resilience in there, and players like Rafferty, Kinsella, you know, Menton. Like, you know, there was so much to like about Meath. And I agree with you, from what I seen in a very strange first half, because I thought this was going to be a shootout. And that's some of the strange things we see in football now. It was a very touchy first half, but Meath were very much in control and missing a handful of chances. But as you said, whenever Galway hit that 2-3, you must have been feeling then that it's Galway are going to take over. So it showed a lot of backbone to this Meath team that they're ready for that type of challenge, didn't fear it, and come back at Galway.
Yeah, and you mentioned Rafferty there, Brendan. Like, he's the find of the season for Meath, because he wasn't really involved in previous years. He was never established. He's in his mid-20s now, but he's powerful. He's a very powerful runner, accelerating forward. And he's delivered some of the biggest hits I've seen in the Championship this year from any player, going back through the round robin and even in the Leinster Championship. So he's been a real find that Robbie Brennan has placed a lot of faith in this year. And he was off the field, and I don't know, was that a miscommunication, because he was straight back on? But he would have been tailor-made for Damien Comer now, from a power point of view. And when when he was off the pitch, Comer did, as we saw, a lot of damage, fouled for the 2-point free, and then had an involvement in the McDade goal, I think it was, as well. So from that point of view, he was missed when he was off the field for that Comer presence, and certainly Comer brings a destructive element against whatever team he's playing with, the power that he can generate around the square.
Yeah, indeed. And so, obviously, again, Meath are going to go on underdogs, as they have been in those other three previous games where they've turned over supposed better opposition. Is that the big warning for Donegal? Or is the big thing now, there's 2 weeks, Donegal have a rest. There's going to be trawling of all the video. They're going to be looking at ways to try and shut down this Meath team. Do you see it a case of Meath wanting to come at Donegal, wanting to kick the ball and run it, and Donegal sitting and trying to protect the arc in and around there and hitting Meath in the counter? Do you see it as a game of two styles, possibly?
Well, I see Donegal doing their due diligence on Meath in a way that I'm not sure other opponents have fully set about doing. I see Donegal probably getting their matchups right with the likes of Morris and Costello in a way that I didn't think Galway did yesterday. So they have 2 weeks to prepare for Meath. They're obviously will be well aware of the threats, but I think overall Meath will be meeting a different challenge in Donegal, because I don't think there's a more athletic team, an ability for strike runners from the back, from obviously Pather Mogan and Ryan McHugh, who are doing it continuously. But now you've Kieran Moore, and his performance against the second half against Mayo really stands out. And you've Owen Ballingallagher coming back as well. So you've got these runners from deep positions that I think will give Meath a lot of trouble, and they'll punch holes where maybe other teams they'll punch holes at pace that maybe other teams haven't been able to do. But first and foremost, I think Jim McGuinness will absolutely do that due diligence that I don't think other teams have done sufficiently on this Meath team.
Yeah, all set for an interesting one, no doubt. Listen, well, we left the worst to the last then, because I'm glad you said that, Colm, because we were doing commentary in the Donegal morning game and we were getting quite excited, particularly in the second half. I sat up with my sons in watching the Tyrone game, and I was like, is it just me or is this dead here? There seemed to be a real deadness to the game, and it was played at a very funny pace in terms of you get it, knocking about. Like, if anything, particularly in the first half, because like everybody would try to get out and down the road, Dublin were almost trying to take Tyrone on their counter-attack. And it seemed every game, it's a flip-flop a lot with Dublin in terms of, you know, coming, they seem to have something in there. We just don't see enough of it. And with Tyrone too, very unpredictable. The fact that they won by 7 points, from what I'd seen, was very unusual. So Dublin just going flat in the end. Of course, Conn coming on to try and rescue the day wasn't enough. But what do you make of Tyrone then coming into this semi? Is it for you, I suppose, it's been a good season for them to get to this stage, but do you think they'll have enough to take this Kerry side?
Well, I don't. On anything that I've seen, I don't think they'll have enough, but there is huge scope there for improvement. There's no doubt, because that was not a very high standard game, even for Dublin and Tyrone, and how good they are and how high up on the scale that they are. It was very pedestrian, and it was a reminder that even with the new rules and all our excitement about the football that's been playing, there is still some bad games out there, and that was a bad game. But Dublin have really, really struggled with the arc, Brendan. They were beaten 5-0 on 2-pointers against Tyrone the other night. The reluctance on the behalf of some of their players, most of their players, to shoot was just incredible for a team of their standard. They're so used to bringing the ball into the percentage zone all the time, that high percentage zone that was such a feature of Jim Gavin's team. And obviously Desi Farrell continued on with that. But that into that 80 to 90% zone, just so held to that, the confidence to kick 2-pointers hasn't been there. Like, even Wicklow in the first game of the year out 2-pointed Dublin 4-2. It's 23-10 against for that alone. And I just don't think they have got a handle. They don't have the shooters within the Dublin squad to make it count. And unless Dublin didn't score a goal the last night, they didn't score a 2-pointer. In today's game, this year's game, from now on, unless you're scoring goals, unless you're scoring 2-pointers, you're not going to win a game of that standard. And I think that proved it. Brilliant. With Tyrone off the bench, Rory Canavan, Owen McElhone, there's so much more in Owen McElhone. We just don't know what his ceiling is. We don't know what the Tyrone ceiling is. I think Michael McCarron's a big loss to them. I do think they will improve. Kerry will bring a lot more out of them. But on the most recent meeting in the 2023 All-Ireland quarterfinal, Kerry won that quite convincingly. They mightn't have Dermot O'Connor, who had an outstanding game against Brian Kennedy and Con Kilpatrick that day. But they do have Joe O'Connor, and he's been quite a force for them this year. He was played on the wrong wing, as far as I thought. He's coming in off the left, but I think he should be the midfielder, the anchor midfielder for Kerry all the time. And I think he'll be in there against Kennedy and Kilpatrick next day.
Yeah, all set to play for. Listen, Colm Keyes, what a brilliant wrap-up. Thank you so much, sir. And I'll see you up at the semi-finals. We'll have green and gold armbands on.
That's it, Brendan. I look forward to that.
You'll stay down
in the boyne.
I'll have to come down again, Colm. Top man. Much appreciated, my man.
Thanks, Brendan.
That's Colm Keyes there, Irish Independent. Fair play to him. Lad, thank you so much for that wrap-up. Folks, I want to thank Martin Michael Haney, of course, and Conor McManus. Earlier in the show, Joe Dex for producing, head of Sport, Ash and Kelly. I'll speak to y'all next week.